You are listening to Radio Albion.
Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. Today is January 24th, 2023, and this is Matthew Raphael Johnson, as always. I have a video in front of me taken by a friend of mine in downtown Kiev. What appears to be an old man being arrested. And he's resisting. However, what they're saying, I think his wife is around. There's a lot of voices. He's trying to get away from policemen. And in Ukrainian, he is actually not being arrested for any crime. He's being impressed into the army. That's what the government in Kiev, this is what the regime means by democracy. Now, there is no legitimate government in Kiev. It is despised. It is Jewish through and through. And this is what they're resorting to. These people don't have training. They don't know one end of a gun from another. And they're simply throwing bodies at this. I want to make one thing very clear. The Jewish government in Kiev has been there for some time, has no authority, no legitimacy. It was simply installed by their colonial overlords, that is to say, the BlackRock organization and the U.S. government acting as their enforcer. This, you know, whether it be Jews in the U.S., in foreign policy and economic establishment, BlackRock itself, or Zelensky personally in his cabinet, this has nothing to do with Ukraine or Ukrainians. This government has absolutely no right to exist, and is essentially a colonial administration. They're simply, I've been saying this since 2014, overseeing simply the liquidation of the entire economy. There is no functional economy. About 9 months ago, Zelensky, who again, he doesn't have any independence, he says what he's told, especially now that BlackRock is involved directly. Actually, it was April of last year. I alluded to it once or twice. It's Zelensky's drive to make Ukraine another Israel. Remember, Israel in the Middle East is not the center of Judaism, has never been. They have nothing to do with Jerusalem. These are ultimately Khazars from the Black Sea area, especially right in Ukraine. Odessa is supposed to be the center of Adam Kadmon or the Antichrist, the new man of the Kabbalah. And, of course, not a whole lot of people fully understood what he meant. He wants the country, or whatever's left after the war, to be an armed camp, and to be permanently an armed camp. The quote, some of you may have come across this, of course it's written in English on his website. He says, "We will not be surprised that we will have representatives of the armed forces and the National Guard in all institutions, supermarkets, cinemas. There'll be people with weapons everywhere. I'm sure that our security issue will be number one in the next decade." So he then relates that to Israel. Not because Israel does it, we should. He mentions it over and over again. This is what he wants Ukraine to be. Point is, none of this has anything to do with Ukraine. The center, the new Khazaria, which I've been talking about for a long time, was meant to be in Odessa. It's the final admission that these are Khazars. They have nothing to do with places like Jerusalem. Now the reason he does this, and the reason he says this, he hasn't been bringing it up that much, but it's still on the agenda, is that the economy has been liquidated. It was liquidated after, well, even really before this, between 2004 and 2014. You know, when the revolution took place, and the Yanukovych government was eliminated, you know, the first things that happened is that the Ukrainian gas company, Naftogaz, increased its rates by 50%, May 1st, 2014. Anyone working for the government has withholding rates between 40 and 70% of their salary, depending on the rank. Of course, I wrote this at the time. In fact, I'm looking at my paper from July of 2014. Since the middle ranks of the Kievan civil service makes about 1,000 hryvnia monthly, which is not by itself a living wage, they've been taxed to the point where only the black market keeps them alive. And of course, all social services, starting in 2014, and this had been in process long before that, have been slashed to the bone. And I was the first one, I think I've mentioned this, I was the first one to translate the Constitution and Declaration of Independence of the Donetsk and Luhansk Republics. And let me reiterate, it came out July 4th, 2014, and this is their description of what occurred that year. Ukraine has been a victim of a coup with the support of all elite bodies and paramilitary forces. This new government is frantically searching for legitimacy and has, as a result, gone to the West for protection. Worse, they have signed all manner of agreements that eliminate what independence remained with Western capital. In the process, this new government, in quotes, has severed itself from the rest of the Slavic world. They have instituted a massive program of media censorship and use anti-Russian prejudice as their local propaganda. They created a Russian image that is now an enemy. Today, Kiev is a colony of Western capital. The people of the Donetsk region sees Eurasia as the future, not the West. There could be no cooperation with an illegitimate government run by criminals. We support the essential principles of international law, which presently cannot be observed after the coup. The will of our people is clear, and the Regional Council of Donetsk region proclaims the official establishment of an independent state. Whatever Kiev started to do, and this was a very Jewish movement on both sides of the Atlantic, the Donetsk Republic did the opposite. Most people don't know the foundations of this war and the whole purpose of building this semi-Ukrainian military force was to invade the eastern regions, because only there do you have functional and any kind of a functional economy. So ultimately, the revolution, the coup, they call it a coup only because it occurred only in one city. It was simply a toppling of a government. As I said at the time, that Euromaidan was just a debt collection arrangement by Western firms, yet, you know, with very little coming out of it. A devastated Ukrainian citizen from then on had minimal in terms of medical services, education, intermittent electricity, and heaped only on occasion. And this was years ago. Massive increase of tax rates to the point where, you know, fraud is everywhere. Any kind of credits or reductions, rebates were canceled then. And of course, everything has gotten worse since then. There's a tax now on everything. And then when they look at Crimea, once they made it clear that they were separating, no one's surprised. It was a 92% margin for joining Russia. No one wants to be a part of that sinking ship of Ukraine. It was a massive Russian energy plant built offshore. About $5 billion just in 2014 alone. Everything from energy, agriculture, tourist projects. So those in the Ukrainian area see their entire economy gone, being sold off, whatever is left, roughly between 30 and 40% of its market value. And from 2014 onward, Crimea suffered a labor shortage. So the point of the Novorossiya movement in eastern Ukraine was to protect Russians. The mass ignorance allows media to say that there's all these atrocities, which were all written beforehand, against the civilian population. I mean, it's the only people who despise the civilian population over there live in Kiev. These are all Russian speakers who have nothing but positive associations with Russia as a nation, as an ethnicity. And the only reason that Ukraine functioned was that you had these artificial injections of liquidity from Western elites. I said it then and I say it now. They will never see this money ever again. And I wrote in August 27th of 2014 that the currency is in a total state of collapse. Obviously, everything has gotten worse since then. So the quote-unquote prime minister, the Jewish Yatsenyuk, called on Western banks again to throw money at this unsolvable problem. The currency went from 15 to 1 against the dollar and continues to fall from then to today. There's no production. There's no confidence in the system. The only thing that kept it afloat even briefly was foreign aid and what Zelensky is talking about. The only thing that Ukraine has to offer the West is that it's a fairly large country that can be the staging ground for NATO to rebuild its forces in such a way that every aspect of Ukrainian life will be militarized. Since the government has very little authority, these will be mercenaries. These will be people brought in from around the planet and have no connection with Ukraine at all, just like this government has no connection with Ukraine. Back then, by the end of the summer in 2014, business losses amounted to $140 billion from January to September. Now, there was about 50% of the companies in Ukraine that year also saw increased profits. Now, how can that be? You don't have to be an economist to figure out that those profits, they're not from Ukrainian firms at all. That represents the European or American buyouts of Ukrainian companies. So they're nothing more than ledger entries, since for the most part, they're not worth very much. So they talk about streamlining business. They're selling off, stripping capital, firing workers, and that's seen as a net gain, in the ledger anyway, since the capital valuations will rise and depreciation will fall. So the mere movement of cash in an area is said to be economic growth. Of course, it isn't. It has nothing to do with production. Profits and speculating on Ukrainian capital aren't profits at all in any sense of the term. But as always, oligarchy and monopoly aren't honest and don't have to be honest about anything. The old Ukrainian Agrarian Forum, in the first week of July of 2014, saw Yatsenyuk terming the liquidation of Ukrainian assets quote-unquote privatization. Any profitable company that year was privatized. That is to say, sold off to foreigners. The minute that was the agenda, the criminal code was completely rewritten without any input from anybody. Rewritten directly by Western capital, making it very easy to buy farmland and state resources that technically couldn't be sold to foreigners, kind of the point of having state-owned companies anyway. But even, as Westerners rebuilt Ukrainian military, with desperately needed money, needed in basic infrastructure, and yet they wanted a navy and a nuclear arsenal and everything that they can't afford, and again, the whole point of talking about this is that this is what Zelensky means. It's going to be a security state, very much like Israel is relative to the U.S., It doesn't offer anything else. We don't have to have a functional economy. We can have this Jewish oligarchy, which the West calls democracy, and they're not kidding. Zelensky says that, the Ukraine is not going to be liberal, nor will it be authoritarian. I don't think he knows what any of these words mean. Of course, this is perfectly consistent with liberalism, because liberalism allows the centralization of private capital and the takeover of every possible media outlet. That's what occurred in the U.S. It occurs everywhere. But this is years ago, and it's only gotten worse since then. So these are third world numbers. All social services were slashed 50% across the board just then. And of course, the VAT taxes were increasing. Even stupid things like they were saying back then that Ukraine is going to take over the American corn market. You imagine these stupid claims. And then the minute, you know, they didn't need to make these dumb promises anymore, they were jettisoned and no one ever heard about them again. So that's the first quarter of 2014. Losses registered by Ukrainian businesses of all types were monstrous, an increase of 550%. So the total negative balance for the private sector as a whole amounted to about $11 billion in losses just in a short period of time, according to the National Bank of Ukraine, which is an American, you know, they all speak English and all the rest of it. And of course, these policies, this is in 2014, have led to a monstrous drop in capital investment by about 25%. And of course, the massive disruption in trade with Russia, where 80% of its exports went. But there's no money to retool not just the economy, but the military system in such a way as to make it connected to the West. The fact is, Ukraine has nothing that the West wants. You know, Yatsenyuk and Poroshenko going on about how Ukraine's going to be the granary of Europe is ridiculous, since they make far more food than the West could eat. We talked about this on this show and others before, that it's going to be GMO experimentation, which is why they quickly rewrote the laws to foreigners buying farmland. So between then and now, Ukraine has been unable to pay any of its bills. So the only thing it could do, and this connection with Israel both is ethnic, most of the churches have been banned. I've got it on good authority that most of the clergy at the Kiev Caves Monastery has been arrested. Again, under Jewish auspices. So he's not just talking about Israel relative to military. He is, but also in terms of the ban on Christianity. And he could always say, because they're connected with Russia, they can't be a part of our society. And the U.S. will call that democracy. But the U.S. also supported the anti-religious campaigns in the Soviet Union, also a Jewish matter. So the only choice they had, and the only possibility, the only option that was in front of them, was to say that we are now enemies of Russia. This is how Kosovo got away with being a mafia state from the 90s until now. A one-party mafia state with no functional economy except crime. I predicted at the time that Kiev was going to head in that same direction, and I was right. The only reason that they're tolerated is that they come into NATO, and they come to NATO and support Western foreign policy aims there. But it's also very costly. But even in the 90s, from 91 to 96, Ukraine had been losing basic GDP values between 10% and 25% yearly. Hyperinflation, massive concentration of wealth in a few families. Very few of it are actually Ukrainian. Infrastructure fell to pieces. Roads are absolutely unreliable. Half its GDP disappeared in the 1990s, and very little developed to take its place, because there is no confidence. So asset stripping and being, you know, Kosovo-style bandit behavior was the only thing that was really encouraged. In 2012, Ukraine's capital depreciation was over 300% more rapid than in the West. And this is why the Ukrainian, so-called Ukrainian government, which is a colonial Judaic government, went along with creating this pure security state in the East. This was the purpose of the Russian invasion. This is why it happened. Because had Russia not invaded in late February last year, there would have been a gigantic mercenary invasion of the East. And it was a mercenary invasion because so many, and I spoke about this at the time, so many Ukrainians were unwilling to fire on Slavs, Russians, Ukrainians living in the eastern regions. So, now why do I say all this? I don't like the idea, because so much has been, you know, so much that's specifically Ukrainian has been discredited in the minds of Russians. And it's a shame. And that's why I want to stress that none of this is actually Ukrainian. None of this is in the interests of the Ukrainian nation. The Jewish elite despises Ukrainians as much as it despises Russians. For years, Jews condemned Ukraine as a Cossack republic. And of course, the Cossacks agreed on one major thing, that the Jews were the enemy. From Khmelnytsky to the Haidamak revolt, the bulk of the world's Jewish population was living in Ukraine, the Polish Empire, and controlled most of the economy. I've dealt with that in great detail over and over again. The fact that this war is leading to the depopulation of Ukraine is no accident. Jews in Ukraine have been, especially in Odessa, have been calling for the destruction of the country because of the Cossack, what they consider Cossack atrocities in the past. Well, this is simply a matter of self-defense. But there are many aspects of the Ukrainian tradition that are extremely helpful. This is why I wrote my book, Ukrainian Nationalism. This had nothing to do with, you know, American foreign policy of, you know, in the 21st century. That's irrelevant. Again, none of this is Ukrainian. This is why I stressed that Zelensky's building essentially a copy of Israel and whatever's left of Ukraine at the time, because only a Western-supported security state is the only thing that has any hope of keeping the country afloat. The only asset it has is saying that we can serve your interests as an enemy of Russia. Let me just briefly, you know, people talk about NATO, and I scoured the NATO website as to what it takes, and the same thing goes for the EU, the minimum conditions to be a part of NATO. One of the reasons that the regime that took over in 2014 wants to become a NATO state is that then they will be the recipient of massive investment in that particular sector. What Zelensky's ultimately saying is that in being recreating Israel there, first of all, that's been the plan to begin with the new Khazaria movement, we've talked about it at length, but then the area of specialization of Ukraine in the world economy, the liberal economy anyway, is to essentially be an armed camp against the enemies of the system, which they know are permanently in Russia. But these are the minimum requirements from the NATO website to becoming a member. Remember, Albania, that does not have an army, is a member of NATO. First, new members must uphold democracy, including tolerating diversity. This is a very odd phrasing. We all know what democracy is. Democracy is liberalism, especially in the economic realm. Democracy is being defined as permitting BlackRock to control your economy or rebuild it according to their own interests. I don't know what tolerating diversity, why the word tolerate? They're talking about imposing, whether it be abortion or easy divorce, feminism, and the homosexual domination of the schools and everything else. imposing this on a population that does not want it. This is what that means. Tolerating diversity. This is something then imposed from above. Second, new members must be making progress towards a market economy. And we all know what that means. That's not that different from what they consider democracy. A market economy is defined as an oligarchy. I exposed the redefining of that term from the late 90s, that they explicitly, and I have my old website many years ago, I had a list of quotes from, whether it be Harvard University and the State Department, big universities, saying that the oligarchs are the vanguard of democracy there. Because they were Jewish, because they supported Western interests for the most part. Making progress towards a market economy, this is retooling everything to become an adjunct to Western interests. Third, and this is, this is about, you have to read between the lines here, because these by themselves don't say very much. Military forces, the country wanting to join NATO, have to be firmly under civilian control. This has many shades of meaning. One of the more important aspects is that it has to be itself connected to the ideology of the regime. You've seen massive purges in the American officer corps at all branches, and bringing in, largely incompetent, but ideologically reliable officers. And that's been going on for a long time. It happened largely during the Obama administration and continues. There's nothing but chaos in the upper ranks of the U.S. military. And the reason is ideological. The last thing the regime wants is a patriotic general to make trouble. And they'll sacrifice competence for reliability. That's what civilian control means. This is almost a given as far as European life is concerned. But stressing it means that they're actually saying something else. Fourth, and this is curious, the wording is they, meaning the state, wanting to become a part of NATO, they have to be good neighbors and respect sovereignty outside their borders. The only way that that makes any sense is that sovereignty has been redefined just like democracy and equality and everything else. Even law has been redefined. Sovereignty is actually its negation. It's support of the American empire. The whole point of NATO and the empire is that sovereignty doesn't mean anything. Another way to understand this is that sovereignty and democracy are more or less, but not entirely, synonymous. And five, this is the big one, and this is the one that costs billions of dollars. They must be working towards compatibility with NATO forces. Now, these conditions are usually thrown out the window whenever Russia's involved. So when the regime created this independent Montenegro, the NGOs created this referendum idea. We've talked about Montenegro on this show many times. The first thing they did was offer basic NATO membership, or at least the process. Albania was just the funniest one, but Montenegro has 500,000 people in it. So these can be tossed overboard because most of these places are pro-Russian. Bosnia and Albania was one of the reasons that Bulgaria had to be brought in to the European Union very quickly, despite having zero of the minimum conditions for European membership. It didn't matter because Bulgaria has always been extremely pro-Russia. And of course, they simply deindustrialized the country, making it dependent on Western supplies of energy, despite the fact that it was selling energy prior to that. Because these things are very complicated, they often escape, or they're granted distractions in politics, which is, again, the distraction of the war in Ukraine, and the fact that there's no functional economy. So, and then from this, it goes to the NATO action plan. But the working towards compatibility is really significant here. And the fact that all of these are fully congruent with Zelensky's claim to be building a new Israel, a highly militarized one-party state. We have to then, of course, redefine terms like sovereignty and market economy and diversity and democracy. Because just as Israel has been considered a model democracy, despite being completely authoritarian, which in many cases, if they weren't connected with American capital and manipulating the U.S., it's a model to be followed by ethnic groups. Every ethnic group has a right to a state, just not one that drags its patrons into war all the time. The Zelensky's idea of this armed camp is that NATO will then come in and remake these forces. Now, this is why all of this is very closely connected. I think most of you probably realize by now that nothing that the American press says can be trusted, especially in these relatively obscure areas. But you have some good writers. Mike Whitney wrote just a few days ago that the very fact that there is this plan to confront Russia militarily is what he says a tacit admission that the United States can no longer maintain its global dominance through economic or political means alone. Ultimately, the Western plan seems to be, and there's very little preparation for this, that the world will be clearly divided into warring camps. And the point is that this is being militarized. Democracy and sovereignty are being redefined to reflect this, the very opposite of what these terms initially meant. The liberal states and the American empire is far worse today than it was a year ago. And this show, and a handful of others following me, realized just how good these sanctions were for the Russian economy, how good it was for Eastern Ukraine, how good it was for Crimea. The economic situation of Ukraine in 2014, let alone now, made it a complete basket case. The regime doesn't have, with all the debt, private and public, doesn't really have the liquidity for this. Worst of all, the massive and unsustainable losses on the battlefield for these drafted, untrained Ukrainians, and the destruction of these mercenaries. And Whitney and a bunch of others have made the point that the U.S. and the West seem to believe their own nonsense to such an extent that they never really prepared themselves for all possibilities. And it comes down to something I've said many times before. Foreign policy, especially under conditions of oligarchy and monopoly, don't respond to actual events. Don't seek the truth of the matter, but create their opponents in their minds. See, in the Western mentality in Washington, they'll tell you that Russia is an undeveloped economy, as is China, of course. The only part of their economy that matters is oil and gas. They don't have an effective military force. They don't have, the government doesn't have the support. The ruling party doesn't have the support. Russia doesn't have any allies, and the wave of the future and the key to history is Western liberalism. They believe this. They live in a complete hothouse environment. They don't hear any other point of view. That means they are completely shocked by how badly things are going. And the fact is that while it's true, I think Putin underestimated what the West was willing to invest with money, frankly, it doesn't have. The West, however, didn't expect this amount of weapons to be needed. There's almost nothing left in Western stockpiles. The fact that the U.S. is taking weaponry from Israel and shipping it in, I mean, there's nothing left for any other battle. They didn't seem, because of their prejudice against Russia, they had no idea that this was a possibility. And Whitney does this pretty brilliantly. I've alluded to some of this in the past. Number one, they never thought that sanctions would backfire. They really believe that the U.S. is this superpower that has control over the planet. It's not true. The U.S. is now a regional power that still lives in the fantasy that it's a global hegemon. It is not. And certainly they never thought that they would run out of ammunition. They simply refuse to wrap their brain around the fact that Russia's military is at least an equal to the Western, and in fact, in many ways, is superior. Because they had no comprehension of the nature of the Russian economy, and Russian resolve in general, they had no clue that the economy would go through the roof because energy prices would increase. They certainly didn't realize that India would then sop up all of the sales that don't go to the West. And, of course, China has increased, and Iran, which is a first-world economy, has joined what amounts to a brand-new coalition. How many years have I been talking about the Shanghai Cooperation Organization? Because of the mythology that they actually have come to believe, the regime never considered that the U.S. doesn't have many allies, and that the overwhelming majority of the nations of the world maintain good economic relations with Russia. In truth, really, the only allies that the U.S. can count on, and even this is pushing it, is Canada, Japan, and maybe South Korea. Of course, the U.K. Otherwise, these countries either have maintained relations with Russia or are very iffy about the sanctions. You know, Germany is heavily invested in Russia. It's losing a fortune. It's being deindustrialized in front of our eyes. This is why, despite the fact that Germany really isn't an independent country, it's still in the post-war American control, have no interest in. How many times have I said that the Germans are not maintaining sanctions? And the last thing is that the regime didn't count on the fact that it would need a coherent strategy at all. This is what happens when you have, you know, zero scholarship, when the academic elite are worthless, when they're simply a matter of groupthink. This is what happens when you censor everything and you don't permit a pro-Russian point of view that can be a counterweight to this. And Donald Trump was no better than Biden. I mean, he did lay the groundwork for this war, but international politics wasn't really his forte. And making matters worse, very recently, the General Eric Vaught, who was a military policy advisor to Merkel up until 2013, yeah, he talks about the disaster of this policy. He's being condemned all over the place, but he is one of the highest-ranking people he spouts the obligatory lines, but he also condemns the policy as a whole, that Ukraine simply can't last. All forms of diplomacy have been rejected, not even attempted. You know, he's trying to keep a handful of the Leopard tanks going to Ukraine. There aren't the people to run it. There aren't the infrastructure to keep them fueled up. There's not the people there for this. These are symbolic. This is why these things are being sold on the black market. The infrastructure to launch a major war of attrition doesn't exist. Everything now is very artificial. And the fact that in this famous military trilemma of counterinsurgency, Russia has, at least up until recently, attempted to minimize civilian casualties and minimize their own, well, if you do that, you can't have, you can't destroy the insurgency. The trilemma is that you can't have, at the same time, you can't try to protect, lower your own casualties, lower civilian casualties, and quickly destroy huge numbers of your opponent. Those three things can't exist at the same time. The Russian strategy was not to commit many, a huge army, to fight this war based on artillery and avoid civilian casualties by no matter what. Since, of course, this is being done in Russian territory. These are all Russian speakers in this part of the world. Now, that might be changing. And, of course, this General Vod seems to think it is. He says, well, the West can send 100 Martins and 100 Leopards, meaning tanks there. They don't change anything in the overall situation. And the all-important question is how to end such a conflict with warlike nuclear power, mind you, the most powerful nuclear power in the world, wants to survive without going to a third world war. And then he continues, and he says, this all means further destruction of Ukraine. What's left of this country? The country will be leveled to the ground. Ultimately, that's no longer an option for Ukraine either. The key to solving the conflict doesn't lie in Kiev, nor does it lie in Berlin, Brussels, or Paris. It lies in Washington and Moscow. A broader front for peace must be built in Washington. Otherwise, we wake up one morning and we're in the middle of World War III. To have a high-ranking man like him to talk like this, even though he tries to keep it as moderate as possible, as if Washington, you know, has any right to be dealing with this area at all. And that Russia's warlike and all this, you know, he spouts all that. His career, as we probably figured out, is over. And this was published in the German site Emma. It's a news site. And it was entitled, What Are the Western War Aims? And as I've said before, there doesn't seem to be any coherent policy. So he summarizes it this way. The Western media, of course, is corrupt, as we've all know. They don't know anything about the area, they don't know anything about military policy, and they wildly overestimated Ukrainian success on the battlefield. Ukraine has been losing the war since day one. When you have an army trying to minimize civilian casualties and minimize their own casualties, you're not going to see spectacular advances, despite the fact that Russian artillery has destroyed the infrastructure of military infrastructure of the country. Beyond that, of course, the Russians were winning the war from late February to now, as I said consistently from the beginning. Vlad himself says the Russians will take Donbass very soon. Most of the fighters are not Ukrainians at all. And of course, because, again, mocking the ignorance of the population, he goes on to say that weaponry is not going to decide this. Especially when you have such overwhelming superiority, or Russia using a handful of percent of its military ability. Now, we're in a situation where Russia says, "Okay, we're going to massively increase the investment in Ukraine." There, the West has nothing to answer it. It can't do much by itself because it has a global empire. It can't commit very many men. It certainly can't count on its Western allies, who don't have militaries worth anything, since they relied on the U.S. for everything for so many years. And the worst part of all is that there is no end point. There are no strategically defined objectives. Somehow people think that you deliver a few tanks and it's going to bring Russians to the negotiating table. Well, the Russians have been rebuffed from the negotiating table. They didn't even say, well, what's the point? Do you want to reconquer eastern Ukraine? Do you want to destroy Russia? Do you want to overthrow the government there? No one has answered these questions. And I say it's extremely important to understand that this is what happens when ignorance isn't just in the public, but ignorance exists among the elites. And by ignorance, I mean the fact that rather than study the situation factually and logically, they find it easier to project their own inadequacies and problems onto their opponents, creating an enemy that, of course, doesn't exist. And this has been the case since the Crimean War, at least. in the 19th century. The exact same sort of propaganda. It's shocking, the similarity between the propaganda of the Crimean War and today. This has been an ongoing thing, except, of course, when the Soviet Union exists. There, it was completely suspended. Of course, the Soviet Union wasn't Russian. It had many Russian people in it, but it wasn't a Russian movement at all. But, you know, only when they were a Leninist state, then all of a sudden all the propaganda from Crimea and today went away. And this is extremely important to understand. The Russian response to the current situation has been made very clear. Unlike the West, the Russians have a very clear set of objectives that they stated in the beginning and that they continue to state today. They underestimated the number of bodies on the ground that they needed. And there's been some excellent writing in this respect, usually from, you know, info, the BRICS page. InfoBRICS has done a very good job here. And it was really, I think, around the 10th or 11th of January, the Russian government shuffled its commanders around. And it's placed Valery Gerasimov, chief of the general staff, to be the overall commander of the mobilization. And Suvorkin is now one of his deputies. So you have the mobilization of what roughly 300,000 reservists, trained and equipped in, you know, a proper military fashion. The reason that they've shuffled their command structure, though, is because now this war has been bumped up several notches. They're expanding this war. The war is far larger now, and a different sort of commander is necessary. Most of the infrastructure of the country, relative to the military apparatus, is gone. There is no air force, and ammunition is down to nothing. No medical care. And it's still, the government has zero, has absolutely no legitimacy or authority. This year we'll see the end of the war, at least according to the Russian general staff. Gerasimov is not pleased with any of this. I think it's, he said this, I think last week. He said, when Russia finishes this current military campaign, I believe the Ukrainian army will be physically destroyed. Tragically, this means that tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Ukrainian soldiers are going to lose their lives. This is going to be a slaughter, a massacre. But they opted for this, and therefore they're going to pay the price. Now, this is a country that was being depopulated to begin with. So, especially the Odessa New Khazaria movement benefits here. Even if Russia completely mops up, which of course they will, there's really nothing left. You know, a fourth world country that with no functional economy can't maintain a war for long. And Ukraine is basically flat. But losing hundreds of thousands of not just military men, but civilians, is something that suits them just fine. The point of all of this, the same thing goes for China, is to do enough, I mean, if they completely lose, which they will, and really have in every, you know, everything but most, it's like a body on life support. The minute you pull the plug, it's death. You know, there's little ammunition, and the increase in the attacks on heavy weaponry, and what's left of you know, the Western billions either is not getting to Ukraine, is being sold off, or is going into the hands of these recently impressed old men and kids that don't know how to use it. There's no time to train anybody when you have a extremely large army on the doorstep. And the U.S. can do very little about it. So this is, we're talking about a major offensive here, and therefore this is going to be resolved in one form or another. And when that happens, you know, you guys know that the Davos Forum just ended a few days ago. I think it was on the 20th it ended. And it was made clear there that the entire future of globalization and the Great Reset rests on this. If liberalism and its armed camps that it's created all over the world, if they fail in this spectacular way, and of course they will, then the entire legitimacy of the project falls apart. Russia gains a tremendous amount of legitimacy internationally, especially in the developing world. That's going to be going to the SCO rather than Western banks for financing. The battle lines then will be made very, very clear. The U.S. would be reduced to regional hegemonic status at best. They're still going to have fantasies, and they're still going to have all kinds of defense mechanisms. This is the first time, I think, in history that an entire foreign policy has been based on neurosis and defense mechanisms, refusing to believe that liberalism and oligarchy and monopoly can't be sustainable. There is no support. I mean, the big difference between now and, say, you know, World War II is you don't have any civic unity. You have no racial unity. You have no moral unity. You have no religious unity. You have no unity in terms of politics or economics. You don't have the infrastructure for industry. You're dependent on manufacturing from all over the world, especially in countries who are siding with Russia, including its own military. Russian military production is state-owned. The whole concept, as I mentioned, of the NATO expansion is that Western arms producers then are essentially granted a subsidy to allow these countries to shift over their military forces to be totally interchangeable with the Western world, the U.S. and everyone else. The only person that really benefits there, especially because these are very poor countries, the only people that benefit are these gigantic corporations. And Zelensky has been feted by them. He's been to parties with them. And now, as we all know, BlackRock has signed the agreement to rebuild whatever's left of the country. Ukrainians, actual, you know, ethnic Ukrainians, Orthodox people will have zero input on any of this. So what's happening now and how this is going to, at least in theory, is going to go down, is that now you're going to have a tremendous coordination of air, land, and, of course, naval forces against these mercenaries. There really isn't much of a Ukrainian military left. And so it will be a brief intensification of the conflict once this gets put into motion, maybe March or April. This year, and you have people like Scott Ritter and a whole bunch of others who say that the total destruction of the Ukrainian state, even if that's not on the Russian agenda, is something that really can't be stopped, and it will occur within a few months of this year. And with the West not being able to get their hands on any kind of offensive military materiel, there's going to be nothing to send, and there's going to be no men to use it, even if they could find something to send. This is an absolute disaster. The main thing to keep in mind is that New Khazaria pretty much wins, at least in the short term, either way. The United States and BlackRock want this war to last as long as humanly possible. But even, you know, the Joint Chiefs of Staff General, well, actually the chairman, Mark Milley, who's a Trump appointee, made the famous claim now that from a military standpoint, I still maintain that this year it will be very, very difficult to militarily eject the Russian forces from every inch anyway of what he calls Russian-occupied Ukraine. Of course, these are all Russian-speaking regions. The West can pledge as many weapons as they want, but the infrastructure doesn't exist, and in fact, the weapons don't exist. I've been saying for years, if you go to my Patreon page, you're going to see essay after essay explaining how and why the Pentagon has no accounting mechanism for what it possesses, that this is all seat of the pants, again, based on the mythology that the U.S. not only has the right to rule the world, but in fact does. The older term megalomania is relevant here, the refusal to accept the fact that liberalism has failed miserably and has brought misery to, especially in the developing world. So I started this talk with two images. The first image is people being dragged off the street, which is now, I'm told, very common. Young men in their 40s and early 50s are not venturing out unless they absolutely have to. And Zelensky's drive to create the Israel of the Black Sea, and in a sense recreating the Khazar Empire. Of course, that's going to fail, but at an absolute minimum, that Odessa mafia is going to be able to smile over the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Slavs who they've hated for God knows how many hundreds of years. So many of my books on the topic has revolved around why that's the case. I started off with that because Zelensky, of course, has no legitimacy. He was not elected. He's from a government that was installed by the West through a Western finance revolution. He has nothing to do with Ukraine. He's not even a political man. He's a Jewish comedian. That the only thing that he has to offer, sort of like Kosovo, the only thing he has to offer is not economic. It has nothing to do with energy, has nothing to do with finance, has nothing to do with even, you know, specializing in some economic way in the broader system, that we have a certain amount of bodies and we're pledging them to NATO and to the Western banks to use as they see fit. We have an educated population that you can now exploit. And that process started a long time ago, but now you have a one-party state that rules over all this without mercy, and that is explicitly and implicitly perfectly congruent with that so-called NATO values of sovereignty, tolerating diversity, democracy, and the market economy. This is a brand new phase in world history, in the Western world. What the British succeeded in doing in the Opium Wars and everything that that implies, the West, their successors, have failed to do here. And the failure is going to have an impact and consequences that are going to be extremely important for decades to come. We may be at the very end of liberalism and the American empire. And a clown like Zelensky is the perfect person for the perfect, I guess, efficient cause for this to happen. None of this has anything to do with Ukraine. In fact, none of this has anything to do with America. This is an elite, multi-billionaire, disproportionately Jewish, demonic cabal, monopoly, institutionalized in BlackRock in Davos, that is killing whoever they need for their own profits and their own interests. But there are reasons to be optimistic. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and I will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.